we need to regulate AI. Like last year, this kid, you know, commits suicide because he was talking to ChatGPT, and the story of this lady who stopped taking the medication because ChatGPT told her, good for you, stand up for yourself, when she went to the hospital. The same thing goes with this guy who ChatGPT told him, go and cheat on your wife because she's not making you good food. And this guy who thought that he can bend time and go back in time until, you know, he went to the hospital and he has a breakdown, mental breakdown, because ChatGPT convinced him that he can bend time.
Our Bay Area innovator today is Ahmed Banafa, an engineering professor at San Jose State University, technology expert, and author of The Future of Internet of Things. With the rapid rise of AI, tech giants like NVIDIA, AMD, and Intel are reshaping the global landscape through billion-dollar investments and partnerships with OpenAI. But as innovation accelerates, so do the questions. Who's really steering the future of artificial intelligence? And how will it change the way we work, live, and even think? Let's find out in today's episode. This is Bay Area Innovators, and I'm your host, Steve Isbas. Ahmed, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Well, I have to say, welcome back. We had you about a year and a half ago. We really appreciate your expertise at the time. I remember one thing you said last time. You said that AI is a train that left the station and is going, and there's no way to stop it. You can only adjust the rails or make sure it doesn't run into a building or Absolutely. Gets off the tracks, right? Absolutely. The first thing I want to talk to you about is the recent investment. So we talk about, we have NVIDIA, I think it's $100 billion investment into AI. Then AMD comes back maybe a week later.
Right.
And then a couple of days ago, Broadcom
yeah.
has a partnership as well with OpenAI.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the dynamics. What's going on here? I mean, there's just so much money involved.
Well, yes, a lot, you know. Just to give you an idea about this, OpenAI, they invested almost $1 trillion in all this something called circular AI. Mm-hmm. Circular AI is... OpenAI is a software, NVIDIA is the hardware, AMD is a hardware, Intel is a hardware, Broadcom is a hardware. OpenAI, they want to guarantee that the vendors, the suppliers, are healthy, and they are customizing their product and their chips to be used by the algorithm of OpenAI. So when you talk about $5 billion invested in Intel, $10 billion invested in AMD, you know, and they have NVIDIA investing $100 billion in OpenAI for the same reason. They're trying to make sure that anybody who's using OpenAI is going to use the NVIDIA. So this kind of exchange going, I'm going to secure the vendors, whether it's the software or the hardware, is the essence of the circular AI. And this is like a private club, where there are certain players, and those players understand that if one of them is not performing, others will be impacted. So they say, I'm going to support you. I'm going to give you $5 billion. I'm going to give you $10 billion to make sure that it's available. Now, this is really the beginning of a big story, which is, okay, I understand NVIDIA with OpenAI, because you're talking about data centers, but what's the story of Intel and AMD? Mm-hmm. It's the consumer market. Because the biggest plan for, and the grand plan for OpenAI, not to just to be on the data centers, it's to be on every computer. I'm talking about a business, a company, OpenAI, there is 2.5 billion requests, questions every single day. They answer it. They have about 800 million people visiting their website, during their services. You are talking about a huge company that suddenly, in less than 3 years since the generative AI, they became a giant that trying to take the business of Microsoft, the business of Google, and they're trying to get into all the big tech companies, even LinkedIn. They're trying to get the business LinkedIn. Now, you know, a few days ago, Walmart said that you can order your items when you are doing the search on OpenAI using ChatGPT.
Walmart and ChatGPT are teaming up, the nation's largest retailer, announcing a new partnership with OpenAI today. That means customers will soon be able to use the app to help them shop.
I ask my student today, how many of you, when you go and search for something using Google or using ChatGPT, 99% of this, we don't go to Google. We go straight to ChatGPT. You ask the questions.
Wow.
So if I want to know something about, for example, shoes, why not have the ad of the shoes? Why not have the link and have the and come buy it right on the fly?
So it's almost like a big family where they're kind of helping each other to maintain the power and the interest. Now, as far as Google, does that mean you think that Google is going to lose traffic or is going to lose customers in that sense?
Well, it's a competition. It's a big competition for them. For Google, they really struggle at the beginning because one thing about Google, they have most of the technology, but it's sitting in the labs. They don't have, you know, the business mind to go and say, let's put this one in the market and see how that people reactions. Everything we talk about, the whole idea of ChatGPT started at Google. It was really famous paper that published a few years ago, but it was a lab work, nothing practical. Mm-hmm. They realized that. I give them credit for it. So now when you search for anything Google, the first thing comes to you is the answer of Gemini, which is basically the answer of AI. They understand that. Mm-hmm. Now that is start eating on their advertisement because usually you have a list and the advertisement next to it. Then they figure out a way to go around this by having simple answers and have links for the sponsored links. The key thing about it, this is a real competition.
Yes.
You know, and this competition is so fast. It's not 10 years. Yeah. It's by the month. That the ChatGPT and OpenAI, they start coming up with a product that even the case of Google, they're trying to catch up with them. And this is where you see the real challenge.
Yes. Well, you know, I love philosophical questions, right? So I want to ask you, there's a war about AI talent. Right. Everyone is going about talent.
Absolutely.
Right? Would you say this war about AI talent, is it about money or is it about ethics?
It's about the future. Because whoever owns the AI advantage, the company will lead. The bottom line is we are at the start of this revolution, and everybody would like to be the standard. Say, you follow me. You follow my, you know, my standards, my product. Your product has to be compatible with my product so people can buy it. So when they see that, you say, we have this person who is good in AI, this person who is good in AI. The investment here is to not just on getting those people. You hear about companies like Google, companies like Meta, they're buying, a whole company. For the reason of what? Because there are few engineers there that would like to get them with us. So this is you're buying the talent through their company instead of going individually and grab them and say, okay, you stay with that. This is gonna be a department out of this. You know, about, I think, something close to $14 billion for a company. Apple is talking about buying prompt AI. It's not because the product itself is competing with ChatGPT, as much as there are a lot of talents in that company. And those talents, Apple needed so they can catch up with the AI revolution, and which is they're struggling to get to that stage. So, I mean, $200 million, $100 million for the companies when they pay it for an engineer to join Meta. You have to think about it this way: what is $100 million compared to, you know, $10 billion they're going to spend on that?
Yes.
It's a fraction of the price, and you have an advertisement, and you have every single AI engineer want to join you because they say you are paying more for them.
Yes.
So this is it's a big move for them. At the same time, they're telling that if you join us, you're going to have more money. And story of the Silicon Valley. People, you know, engineers from Google will go to Meta. Meta will go to OpenAI. OpenAI will go to this. So this kind of exchange of engineers is very common. Mm. It's just when you're settled and have the product, that's what's matter for them.
And then we have, there's a description, an image of this circular AI and all these companies that interact with each other. I think that picture tells a thousand words of how this is all connected together. We often wonder what can be done from the perspective of legislation to provide safety or so-called guardrails for the quick development of AI before it gets out of hand. And whether by us, and what I mean by us is the United States, regulating ourselves, will it mean that countries like China can take the lead in AI development without regulation? Next is the AB 53, right? That's the legislation that's been
involved. SB 53. Yeah.
Here in California, we just saw some new legislation. Governor Gavin Newsom signed one of the first bills to regulate AI companies in this state. It is called Transparency in Frontier Artificial Intelligence Act, or SB 53. It is the first to focus on the safety of these powerful AI models.
You've been involved with it to some degree. Tell us about what it does and how realistic is that it's making a difference.
Well, I mean, at the beginning of it is, I think the whole motivation for any state bill or assembly bill is we want to be ahead of the curve. Mm-hmm. So there, you know, I published a lot of articles about we need to regulate AI in a way where it's really protecting. And this is like last year. I mean, before we hear about incident of this kid, you know, commit suicide mm-hmm. because he was talking to ChatGPT, and the story of this lady who stopped taking the medication because, you know, the ChatGPT told her, good for you, stand up for yourself, and she went to the hospital. The same thing goes with this guy who ChatGPT told him, go and cheat on your wife because she's not making you good food. And this guy who thought that he can bend time and go back, you know, in time until, you know, he went to the hospital and he has a breakdown, mental breakdown, because ChatGPT convinced him that he can bend time. So there is a dark side of AI.
Yes.
There is a dark side of ChatGPT, Gemini, Anthropic, you know, all of these things. What is required from the companies is they have to understand that they're trying to cover all the scenarios when it comes to an answer. Mm-hmm. Definitely there are one or two scenarios are bad scenarios. They need to cover that. Not wait until somebody do it and then would be reactive to that by saying somebody's suing them. And now we have to think about how can we regulate and protect people.
Yes. The question that often comes to mind is who controls the models and algorithms behind the scenes, and more importantly, how does that affect us? I'm hoping our guest can provide some clarification and insight here. So how do you feel, or how should we feel, about someone like Sam Altman, right, who basically directs, he's in charge of giving the direction to the models for the algorithms, right? Even though he doesn't do it, but he gives the direction, right? How should we feel about that? That pretty much one person is able to dictate in some way how we think. And, you know, I did some searches, just to give an example, I did some searches on ChatGPT and I asked, like, you know, how great was Napoleon Bonaparte?
Right.
You know, I try to stay away from sensitive topics, right? And it's also very politically correct. It says,
correct.
Well, he was a great emperor, but he also had these faults, right? So always kind of brings it both sides, right?
Correct.
So you can say that's reasonable, except maybe a French person may think like, no, he was great, period. You know, you don't have to bring this side, right? But again, the question is, how do we feel about that? That there's one company or one person that somehow gives a direction to all of the thinking that goes on?
Yeah, it's too much power in the hands of one person is always concerning.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen what happened with a situation when one company dominated the market, or one person who is running that company dominated that company, and the company is going after what he is asking or she's asking them to do. The AI is bigger than one person. There is no question about it. He's now the leader of the moment. Mm-hmm. He is the leader of this phase of AI. And he understands that, you know, he understands that he has to do good and has to, so people can accept the fact that he is the standard. He is the person who can look and have the vision and everybody gonna follow him. The product they have is excellent product. There's nobody can say anything about it. And they're first in the market, everybody say go on ChatGPT. You don't hear people talking about going to Gemini or Cloudy or the other products there. And that's 82% of the market that, ChatGPT is really 82% of the market of the chatbot market, so it makes sense. It remind me situation of Sam Altman, you know, with Bill Gates,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And how Bill Gates during the 90s, after Windows 95, he just, you know, went through the roof with his, you know, his background and how powerful he is and how wise he is, and everybody's talking about his story. The same thing goes with Sam Altman. It's just the difference between the time of Microsoft and the rise of Bill Gates, and the one we see it now with Sam Altman and OpenAI, it's a pretty short time. You're talking about November 2022 when we heard about ChatGPT, and it took us a few months to understand what is this, what they're talking about. Yeah. You know, people looking at, what is this?
Yes.
And then in 2023, people start realizing this. 2024, people asking for result. 2025, we are in this one where now we are talking about enterprise level deals with billions of dollars. This short time is really the concern here for somebody to have that much power. And this is why Google, Microsoft, and you talk about all other companies. We don't forget our friend Elon Musk with his Grok, all of them, they are trying to take some of this halo around him by saying, we are in the market too. Mm-hmm. You're not the only one who is in the market. Our product is better than your product, and this is what's proven. And it's not going to end. My prediction for this is because everything is now going with the factor of 10 times what we have seen in the past. So it's faster in this case. Not faster only in time, faster even and bigger in the money that we spend. 20 years ago, $1 billion is $1 billion, a huge number. Now we talk about it as you're talking about, deals for $100 billion and nobody even think about it. What's $100 billion? So this kind of a scale, we see it in a short time. You will see the games of the musical chairs. One time you're going to find this company, one time you're going to find this company, another company going to show up now, and this company will take the crown, take the throne of the AI, because it is at the beginning. It's still the flux area where people can say, I'm the leader, you follow me, this is the proof, and then suddenly you have somebody coming from nowhere. I'll give you a simple example. The reaction of the market to DeepSeek. Mm-hmm. And how it's really made everybody worried in Silicon Valley.
This Monday, and the record $590 billion drop in the market value of U.S. chipmaker NVIDIA. Spooking the markets, the announcement that a Chinese startup can operate its latest AI model for 18 times cheaper than Sam Altman's ChatGPT-4. Is DeepSeek for real?
You spend $5 million and you get something similar to ChatGPT. While they're spending billions of dollars, and people say, what happened here? Why are you spending that much money if we can do it cheaper at this? Mm-hmm. The key element of artificial intelligence is surprise. I'm not going to be surprised tomorrow if a company suddenly, somewhere in the world, they said we have something new. We're talking about France, we're talking about Germany, we're talking about the Middle East, we're talking about Africa, Australia, Asia, China, a company will come up with something, and this something will just wipe out all the features of something we have now. So the driving force about the artificial intelligence is never, never tell that this is the end of the story. The surprise is around the corner.
I would also argue the difference between Bill Gates' Windows 95 or whatever Windows. ChatGPT and what happens today, it really affects people on a much broader scale, right?
Exactly.
It's everything. It's shopping. It's entertainment. It's everything, right?
Correct.
With Gates, it was getting to get involved, but still, it was still very limited in reaching everyone. So, are you worried about getting laid off your job, as your position may become obsolete and replaced by a bot or by an AI function within the system? The concern is reasonable. So let's see how our guest feels about this, and what advice he may have. Let's talk about layoffs. How do you see this whole thing evolving? And there's so much investment into AI. And yes, they will be productizing and monetizing some of their products, right? But isn't a big chunk of the savings that AI companies expect to do is through personnel, through replacing personnel? And what do you see with respect to that and to layoffs?
Okay. Layoff is not good. We know that. I've been through 3 layoffs in my life, and I was looking in the industry. It's not a good feeling. It's a feeling that for a person say that we don't need you, you're not valuable for us. But the issue is, I don't think it is a secret for anybody who's working in any company in Silicon Valley, or maybe in the world in this case, you want to scale it up. not to understand that you need to know something about artificial intelligence. The question here is not to program or create your own agent, is how can I use one of the tools or the tools of AI to make my job better? Mm-hmm. How can I, for example, I'll give you an example. We talk about something called agentic AI. Agentic AI is an autonomous system. It's the next level after the agent AI, which is ChatGPT. Agentic AI is, you have a list of customers and it's an account, you know, payable. Basically, you want to ask him to pay you for that. Usually what happened, this person will go and check them, see the balance, and send an email to them reminding them about it. And then, of course, you're going to be careful about if somebody is an old customer or new customer. And then you start communicating with them, and you give them discount, you give them payment plan, you know, so you can get the money as soon as possible. You know, if you give it to me for 10 days, this is how much we're going to...
So that whole process...
is all automated.
Nice.
All what you're going to do, just give them the account. They're going to go and communicate and look at the history of the customers and send an email and follow up with them and check the bank and make sure they deposit. By the end of the week, you'll have a report about out of 20, we have 17 paid us. We have three of them. This is their answers. And I think they have some problems. And the important thing here is, and this is what made AI really something valuable for business. You know, one of the biggest sources for AI when they search? Social media, news outlets. Mm-hmm. So for example, back to the example of the customers, three of them didn't pay. We checked the news, they're really facing some financial problems. I was given a presentation to an MBA group of students about supply chain and AI. Supply chain is one of the oldest, you know,
topics.
And it's really solid for the MBA, you know, for the Master of Business Administration. And where the AI will get in the picture, supply chain is going to work. It's the thing about it is it's going to tell you information about each stop of the goods that you are receiving. At the same time, it's going to check the news and check the weather. Mm. And then get this information and send it up front so you say, take another route because there is a storm in that area. There is a strike. There is a coup in this country. You cannot do that. There is a war going on in this area. Stay away from that. Mm. Or anticipate this is going to happen. So you have this information, which is exactly like you have one of the smartest assistants in your office, and he or she will say, okay, yeah, this customer couldn't pay because I know, I heard in the news that they do this and this or something happened to them. And now we are talking about, you know, how the layoff will be part
That's
of
right.
it. The recent example is Salesforce. Salesforce, they have the biggest, conference in San Francisco. But 3 weeks ago, the CEO of Salesforce, he said that I managed to get rid of 4,000 in my sales support, but I hired exactly the same number on the technical side. Now, the question, why did you get rid of 4,000? The reason for this one can be automated. Einstein agent, basically that's what they are using there, which is the force agent. That's the name of the program there. It's the internal AI there too. And it's actually doing what I just talked about it, how it's go and
the operation,
automate everything. So why I have three people doing it? I have only one.
Right.
So he took that number of the support sales team from 9,000 to 5,000. Companies, they save money by reducing the payroll, which is the biggest item, on the expenses, about 50% of the expenses, and by increasing the sales. So if you can reduce that and increase the sales, you're doing great. Now back to the news about Salesforce. They asked him about any change in the customer satisfaction. He said exactly the same. Mm-hmm. So if the customers cannot notice that there is a reduction of 4,000 out of 9,000 and the same satisfaction there, then this AI is doing a good job.
Well, it's doing a good job as far as the company goes, but
correct.
Not for the people who got laid off.
No,
yeah, because the ones who got laid off,
yes,
they may not have the skills to get that level of understanding of the technology. So that's not good. So that's my main question. Yes. For those people, what can they do? Right.
Right.
That's going to be an issue. Right.
That's a good question, and there is a saying in Silicon Valley: AI will not take your job. People who know how to use AI will take your job. Mm-hmm. So if you take this in consideration, you'll understand that the only thing which is constant in Silicon Valley is change. And we live through this all the time. So if you hear about AI tools, you have to question yourself, how is this going to impact me in a way, in a positive way? How can I use it to improve my position, to make sure that I can use it for my work? Mm-hmm. If there's any training, there is any certification. You know, I receive, you know, I have about 61,000 followers on LinkedIn. I receive emails from, you know, nonprofit organization. Mm-hmm. How can we use AI to improve our, you know, pitches to the customers? If there's any workshops that we can take, how can we integrate it in our offering? How is it going to help us in reducing our expenses? Mm-hmm. So if companies, if organizations at all these kind of level find out that this is a tool that's going to assist them to improve their performance, because we know that AI actually very famous for three things, which is doing things faster, more accurate, and cheaper. Mm-hmm. And if we take that model and apply it to any industry, and you can improve it and make it product faster and more accurate, of course, you know, the customer is going to be happy. So that is the question for anybody who is working, is always question yourself, where can I improve my position, my tools, my skills using AI? I'll take certification, I'll take training, I'll do this and this, so to make sure that, you know, that's something that I will be protecting myself. Now, the last thing I want to talk about it is companies like Meta. Mm-hmm. One of the, you know, filters they use to let people go is, how would you use AI in your job? Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't have specific answers with specific examples, you're in trouble. And it's the same model used for others, you know, for other companies. Now, tell me, how would you use AI in this case? I mean, simple thing, you know, just, you know, not to complicate things for you know, how going to use it. I mean, what I'm going to do with ChatGPT. Microsoft Copilot, used with Excel, with Word, with, you know, with all the kinds of, use it and see how it's going to help you improve your skills with Excel, do the functions for you, do the running, do the routines for you. The same thing with Microsoft Word, you know, they have the Copilot, you have it running. So that's a way for you to tell yourself, okay, now I see where is the value there.
So that's a very good point. And to follow up on that, that's in a way, in many ways, that's a big question. Does AI help you in that sense or make you dumber? You know, are you going to be able to function, you know, if something, Excel or GPS or whatever it is, right, is going to do it for you, but then is your brain going to function at a different level that you cannot do it yourself?
Right. Well, that's a good question. It's up to you how mm-hmm. you treat the results. Mm-hmm. If you just take it as a face value, you're not going to learn.
Right.
If, for example, Microsoft Excel, and then you ask Copilot to run this for you and have an equation, I want to see how
you
that
have to
goes.
Understand. That.
Yes,
yeah.
It's basically the transparency that you convince yourself that you need, so to understand that it's not just a box input and output mm-hmm. and that's it.
Right.
I want to know, how did we get this number? How can I trust that number?
Yes.
You know, and that is the key. This is why you will see, you know, I did an experiment, you'll see about ChatGPT. I teach advanced math, you know, to students, and I have, and we talk about matrix, you know. The matrix is basically the heart and the soul of the AI, in a way. So it's basically the linear algebra, that's what happened with it. It's basically, what you're doing is you're doing calculation at the same time, because that's the matrix calculation. Uh-huh. So we talk about multiplication, inverse, all, anybody who took linear algebra understand that. So I ask ChatGPT to give me 20 problems of matrix and with a certain operations. It's okay, it created, very nice setup. Okay, now give me the answers. ChatGPT. I use the word he, you know, it's actually it,
he.
You know, this is how our mind, you know, set up for something. Because you feel that you're talking to somebody, an intelligent entity. So give me the answers. Now, I've been teaching for over 25 years. I looked at one of the answers, and I don't like it. I don't like the answer. I said, this doesn't make no sense. So I took the same questions, and I went from ChatGPT 5 to ChatGPT 4. I said, find the answer for this, mm-hmm. this set of 20 questions. give me the answers different from that. I found out that 17 of the answers were wrong.
Wow.
So think about it. If you take this one and apply it to, you know, the, you know, your somebody's position.
Yes.
We have heard about attorneys, they've been censored. Why? Because they gave some kind of, they file answers, they file some kind of briefs there, and they found out that ChatGPT is talking about cases that never happened, or yes. some kind of a federal law that does not exist. Because this is the hallucination part of it.
Yes.
ChatGPT is designed, or AI in general, it's Gemini, ChatGPT, I don't want to start, you know, keep beating on ChatGPT, you yeah. know. But all of them designed to please you.
Yes.
Hallucination yes. is an answer which is looks good, but it is wrong. Yes. That's hallucination. So when you have 17 out of 20, when you have the problems on the filing of that attorney and they are wrong, mm-hmm. now that's dangerous. You cannot apply this when you send something to the customer. You have to be smart enough to do the quality assurance, the quality control, where you say, let me check this, make sure this is correct.
Yes, yes.
And then you can build that trust over time.
But you are doing that, and maybe some of your students and PhD and the really smart tech people will do that. But if we give this to the young people, you know, the middle school or the
right.
high school who...
Right.
They're already not so much into learning, right?
Correct.
They would rather play or something. The chance of them really verifying that answer is probably less. So what's your concern? Should we be worried about the direction it's going into with people who are not going to verify, like you said?
Yeah, too much help is not help.
Yeah.
That's the key thing. If you just throw those questions and I want ChatGPT to find the answer for you, I guarantee you there will be one time when you're going to have the wrong answers. And that's the time where you're going to be exposed. So losing points could be a learning lesson for the student by saying, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. But it's AI. How can it be wrong? AI is wrong until it prove that it is right,
yeah.
which means you have to check the answers. You know,
know how to get to that
absolutely,
point.
Yeah. You have to be the person who knows the steps. This is a big area in AI called explainable AI. Explainable AI is an area that I wrote a few articles about it. And the reason for this is, how can I convince myself that the result is correct if I don't know the steps of that?
Yeah.
Example of this, you use AI in the medical field, and then you have the diagnostic. The doctor gonna say, I wanna check how the AI get to that kind of diagnostic there. And because that's going to, this is death or life things,
exactly.
medication, things like, you cannot play games with this. You cannot take chances on something like
right.
that.
Right.
My math classes, the worst thing can happen with a student, they can lose points.
Right.
But when you talk about, you know, medication, when you talk about the health, when you talk about, that's something you need to know what exactly, how the AI achieved that
mm-hmm.
Part. And then you build trust over time. And you also verify about this. And run it again and again to make sure that it's correct. Surrendering our intelligence, critical thinking to AI is the biggest mistake you can see now.
What is the future utopian society look like? While it may not be easy to forecast even 5 to 10 years into the future, we would still like to hear what our guest has to say about this. Professor Bonafa, thank you so much for your time. I have one last question.
Sure.
And I know you don't have a crystal ball, and it's hard to predict the future, but how do you see the future in the next 5 to 10 years? You know, everything is changing so fast,
right.
no one can tell. But I want to get your take. Where are we heading towards with AI? Are we going to be in a world that robots and the bots, you know, they're doing everything for us, and we just kind of sit there and program or enjoy? Or is it something different? What do you see?
Well, I mean, the robots are coming, but it's not with the speed we're looking for. You know, I can borrow this from Hanson Young, you know, about his, when he said the future is the physical AI. Physical AI is the robots, the cars. We will see AI almost in everything. You can see it in cameras, you can see it, you know, in the chairs, you can see it on, you know, in the houses, where it's going to tell you the proper way of doing things, because it's really something which is designed for specifically for that field. You will see it helping small companies, big companies. It's the catalyst of making sure that the whole society is upgraded, because doing smart things. The key thing about it is if you have a robot, and we see them all the time on TV, how a robot will do this. And the problem is not the robot. The problem is the human. Because if you see some of the incident of the Waymo, you know, that autonomous car, it's finding its way. There's no problem. But if a human, you know, went there and start stand in front of it or have, you know, a construction cone at the top of it, it's going to stop or burn it, you know, in some cases. So the important thing for the future here is the acceptance that the AI will upgrade our life, will upgrade our use, will upgrade what we are doing every day in a way which is going to save us time, save us money, and make sure that we are using it the proper way. IKEA, I want to assemble an IKEA, furniture. It's very difficult. You know, everybody knows the story of that. Yes. How about if there is a small device with it, or the device I have, look at the different parts and guide me through this visually. No, don't do this one. Take this. This is J. This is C. It's like somebody who is from the store standing next to me. Yes. This is what I see it, you know, in the future. It's how it's going to sense the human. There's two terms very common in the Valley: automation and augmentation. Automation means you take over. The augmentation is what we are talking about, which is the human and the AI work together so they can complement each other. We are at this stage. The automation could be in the future.
Do you have any concerns whatsoever that the AI in general is going to make people lazier or function less, being physically or mentally?
We'll have that impact at the beginning. Mm-hmm. We'll have that impact when people find out that somebody else will do the job for them. Mm-hmm. We will have
Why only the beginning? Why not
the transition? It's the transition period between two era. The first era, which is, well, we're talking about the introduction of the AI, and now the AI will be part of that. So this transition where people do not realize that I have extra time, I can do something else. Yeah. I can be more productive in another way. People enjoy the free time when they have it, but after a while they say, no, I have to do something.
I cannot
do that. And also the actions of the layoffs, when the layoffs, you know, start hitting right and left, people are going to say, okay, yeah, AI is good, but at the same time, I have to use it to make sure that I'm more productive. The future is bright in the sense of we're going to have smarter products, safer products, and we're going to get the product faster in so many things. You know, cars will be smarter because they're going to talk to each other, telling you that stay away from this car because they're angry inside that car, or this car has brake problems. Instead of now we see it simply with that flashing light on the mirror, just telling you that there's a car next to you. That's the basic thing about it. You can talk about, you know, microwaves that give you some, you know, health, you know, don't cook it that much. Oh, don't put it this one because this is 2 minutes is too much for it. Same thing with ovens, same thing with the refrigerator, same things. This thing is going to make people really free to do something else and to be more productive in something else. Maybe we'll have time to spend with the kids. Maybe it's time to spend with each other now because we don't have to worry about all those routine things we are doing every day.
Again, Professor, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you for watching another episode of Bay Area Innovators. If you enjoyed this episode and you know someone who should be on our show, please send us an email at sfbay@epochtimes.com. We would love to hear from you. Thank you and see you next week.